the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Sunner. Joining me is my co-host, Brad Harbin. Brad, how are you doing?
Hey, Kyle. I'm doing great. Real excited about this episode. You know, kind of talking about some of our favorites and some of the ones we don't like. So, we're really looking forward to getting into this. How about yourself?
I mean, we've been all over the place, right? If, you know, the Dynasty trilogy, we'll call it.
We have been. Yes.
Last episode, talked a lot about the best ball, the Eliminators, the fun, all the money raised for charity there, so good cause. But, you know, I think it's time we go back to the old favorite and really start to dive into the redraft talk.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So we're going to talk, and you mentioned it, Brad, faves and nays. And the idea for that and that concept, full credit to Dylan. And so, Dylan, thanks for, on the Big D Fantasy Sports Podcast. And, you brought up the topic of faves and nays. And I kind of like that of, the what players were high on, what players were low on. So, Dylan, welcome aboard.
Thank you, fellas. I thanks for the shout out, and I can't wait for this podcast to get on the way.
So, last episode, one of the topics, you mentioned best ball eliminators, but we did start by talking about the Julio Jones trade and the impact on fantasy. So, Dylan, why don't you give your piece and your thoughts about Julio? You could talk about the Falcons, the Titans, Julio himself. How does this trade affect fantasy football values for 2021?
One, I think Derrick Henry owners can relax because the defenses won't put 8 men in the box. I think Derrick Henry will be his usual self. I think he'll be a popular round one, round two pick, depending on what league you're in. I'm intrigued to see how Julio makes Ryan Tannehill owners because depending on what league you win. I've seen some leagues where he's a top 7-8 quarterback, but, you know, does Julio maybe change that? Could he be a top 5-6 quarterback with his rushing upside and potential with two all-pro receivers in A.J. Brown, Julio, and Derrick Henry in the backfield and having another monster? It's going to be interesting. I want to see how healthy Julio is before making inroads because we're not going to learn anything in minicamp or training camp, but I want to see Julio run routes in live action before seeing if he's Julio of the past decade, or if this is the beginning of the end.
Now, is this affecting how you see A.J. Brown, for instance? Or because you're so questionable on Julio, are you considering A.J. Brown kind of near the top of his price? And is there any dip for you in his and how you were going to draft him?
It may hurt A.J. Brown a little bit. I mean, he's still going to be a top 10 receiver. But if he asked me today and said, would I be comfortable taking A.J. Brown? Of course I would. I mean, last year, Corey Davis and A.J. Brown performed well together, and teams now possess 2 or 3 excellent wide receivers. I mean, Godwin and Mike Evans really persuaded Tom Brady to play in Tampa, and having 2 wide receivers will go a long way in making a quarterback successful.
Yeah, and that does come to the nays and faves topic, because I guess I can almost start right there. So before getting to that little hint, though, Brad, we covered it already, but was there any other thoughts you had about the Julio trade?
No, not necessarily. I mean, nothing to really reiterate from last episode, but I did like Dylan's point about Derrick Henry and that, having less people in the box. I mean, I'm certainly excited about him. I know I have Henry on my keeper team that I won last year. So I was probably going to target him anyway to hold on to him because we can only keep one keeper in that league. It's kind of a weird league. I think I've talked to you about it before, but I think that's a great point that, maybe there's going to be less people in the box to, respect the outside. So, I mean, Henry's going to continue to get his and could be possibly a little bit easier for him. I don't know if that's possible, but, yeah, certainly something to look at. So that's an excellent point, Dylan.
Now, I'm curious, first off, so when do you have to make a decision keeper-wise, but what are some of your other options that you might consider?
It was a puzzle, really, for the most part. As far as another running back, I mean, it was kind of really just kind of plug and go. As far as quarterback, I did have Kyler Murray in that league, which I kind of reached on. I mean, so it's a real touchdown driven league. It's not PPR or anything like that. I think it's old school. I mean, they have not evolved with the times by any means. So I mean, it's very touchdown driven. So I mean, Murray would probably be the only one that I would consider, you know, possibly keeping. And wide receiver wise, I did have a Davante Adams. So yeah, I mean, Kyler Murray, Henry, and Adams were pretty much my core. So those are the three. But like I said, very touchdown heavy. So that's why I kind of lean towards keeping Henry there, just to because I mean I was able to really get all three of those guys, because I can't even remember who I kept last year, but it wasn't one of those three core. So I was actually able to draft those guys.
I do have a question about the keeper work, and I guess that maybe another topic we haven't necessarily talked about so much on the show has been is keeper leagues. But so when you keep a player, do you the following year, do you lose the draft pick at where you drafted them, or is it just everyone keeps a player and then everyone just drafts and there's no effect on the draft order or draft rounds?
I've been in other leagues where it is that, where you lose the draft pick. We've also had times where you could either keep two or one, and if you kept two, then you lose that first round pick. But yeah, like I said, this league is like so archaic. It's very mundane, very very cut and dry. So really, everybody just keeps one, because a lot of people were complaining about keeping two, because you know the best teams always pretty much had their two guys. So I mean, I could care less, but yeah. So really, in this league, it's just keeping one, and you pretty much draft, like I'll have the last pick in the first round since I won last year. So kind of a little bit of a disadvantage, but I mean, I'm back-to-back champion going for a three-peat this year. So we'll see how it shakes out. But yeah, there's different ones. All you know, there's definitely different ways. I mean, I assume it's kind of similar to Dynasty about how many you can keep and stuff like that. So it just depends on the league settings.
Yeah, because I've definitely heard of some keeper leagues that feel like they're closer to a Dynasty, where you can keep like 10 players. So that feels like it's almost even more of a Dynasty than less of a keeper. Where, you know, Dynasty traditionally it's the whole team. Like, you're not having to select. You know, if you have rookie draft picks, you got to kind of select who you're going to drop to make room for your rookies. But other than that, it's generally keeping everybody. But yeah, that range, like that keeper range can, as you mentioned, go from one to, you know, generally I see a lot that are 3 to 5, but go anywhere into 10 and maybe even into the double digits. So before I give my answer, actually, Dylan, curious to hear what you have to say about that. So, you know, the three main options appear to be Derrick Henry, Davante Adams, Kyler Murray. In a non-PPR league, who would be your keeper?
I've got a question. Is Aaron Rodgers the quarterback in Green Bay?
Kyle?
I mean, you're asking me what I think. I think yes, but obviously that's not 100% certain.
Right.
I'd probably take Kyler because of his rushing and passing upside. I would assume it's 4 points of passing touchdown, 6 of rushing TD.
Yeah, like I said, very touchdown driven. You actually get 6 for passing, too.
I think in that case, I don't know. Derrick Henry's so safe, though.
Yeah.
Brad, just to clarify, this is one starting QB, right? This isn't Superflex?
Yes. It's just one starting QB. That's correct. Well, yeah, one QB, 2 running backs, 2 receivers, 1 tight end. So like I said, very archaic, very mundane, old school.
Are there not even flex spots?
There's no flex spots. I don't even know why I'm in this league anymore, to be honest. I mean, I've tried to get out, and then I keep winning, and then I feel like responsible that I got to. I mean, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but then I feel like I have to defend my title or something.
Man, that's got to be the worst. Where, oh darn, I won again. Oh no.
Yeah. Show me the money, and yeah, I guess I'll play again, right?
So, Dylan, now that we've kind of got, just covered that. So, yeah, what are you thinking?
I probably would take Derrick Henry because you can't really find running backs. And trust me, I love Kyler. He was on my fantasy team last year, but I think you need the running back. Derrick Henry will get you 1,900 yards a year and probably 20-some-odd touchdowns. They said, your number one pick is going to get you 1,800 yards and 20 touchdowns a year. I'm like, sign me up.
And I mean, really, in this format, talking non-PPR, I think he shoots right up because he doesn't really catch that many passes.
You don't need him to catch 90 balls a year. He's not need to catch 90 balls like CMC, Alvin Kamara, or Austin Eckler.
But in those PPR formats, those players do end up scoring, at least maybe not so much Eckler, but certainly a CMC gets over 100 catches relative to Henry, unless Henry's, again, going for 2,000 yards, doing that back-to-back is pretty difficult to envision, unless he's really going to be all that efficient. And again, 20 touchdowns, 2,000 yards, that's the only way he can keep up with a guy getting 100 receptions in a PPR league. But in a non-PPR league, he doesn't need to. Like, his score from PPR to non-PPR is going to be very little effective because of his lack of reception. So he, instead of, because I figure, in a PPR league, he's probably going to be, I've done a redraft league so far this year. One, we're still in the middle of it. Actually, in that one, it is PPR, and he did go 103, which I was a little surprised with. Ahead of Kamara, ahead of Barkley. But in non-PPR, I think that would be right in line there. Maybe even in non-PPR, maybe you actually have him ahead of McCaffrey and he might be the 101 overall. So I doubt you're going to get a better running back in the draft, to be honest, Brad. And again, the way you're saying it, there's no incentive to keep lower end players you lose a lower draft pick. You basically want to keep the player you think is going to be a first round pick. So I'll be honest, I don't think this is that close. I think it's very easily Henry. So I think your instinct of he's going to be your keeper, I think, is true. Because I think with the potential Rodgers moving, I don't think Davante Adams is a first-round pick anymore in redraft.
Yeah, I mean, and Henry, he plays the Jaguars and the Texans twice. So, I mean, you got to keep that in perspective.
You're going to throw my Jags under the bus right now?
Hey, they're my Jags too, man. I'm in Jacksonville.
Oh!
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, you two live close together, actually, and you both support the same team, so there you go.
Who knows if that 3-4 is going to do anything, but they haven't been able to stop Henry since he's entered the league, really, so I don't see why this year is any different.
I'm already thinking, how many GPP lines can I get Derrick Henry in it against the Jaguars? Because it's going to be ugly.
Right, yeah.
You don't want to see any more 99-yard runs. I think that's the Jags don't need those problems.
6-9 defenders to the house. Oh, gosh.
That's definitely a nay moment, I think, for both of you. So let's talk about those faves and nays. So I'm just going to quickly transition into one of mine. I won't spend too much time on it because it does relate to the Julio Jones news. Although, I'll be honest, I think I probably would have had this quarterback in here anyway. Ryan Tannehill is my QB fave, and I think part of this is where we think they're going to go relative to redraft price. And I know last year Ryan Tannehill was my most rostered quarterback, and just like last year, after an incredibly efficient season, 2019 it was only 11 games, but now we've seen him do it 2 years in a row. I think he should be even more solidified. If I'm doing my redraft rankings for quarterback, he's probably quarterback 7, quarterback 8 for me, especially now with Julio there. I think like two elite targets. I think he's for sure going to have a great season, and he still provides also a bit of some rushing upside, getting rushing touchdowns and just rushing yards in general. So yeah, I'm all in on Tannehill. Again, I expect he's probably going to be my most rostered quarterback, just like last season. So that's my quick spiel on that. Dylan, I know, again, you brought us the segment, so we'll let you kind of go in depth if you want. So you can either talk about Tannehill, although I guess you've already made your piece a bit about the Julio news. If you want to expand on Tannehill, go ahead. But if you want to, you can also talk about your fave quarterback in terms of draft price.
Well, I don't think you're crazy with Tannehill. I think you'd be a top 5-6 quarterback, but I am befuddled why Matthew Stafford is going so low in drafts. By the way, did anybody look at Stafford's 2020 season last year? I know the Lions went 5-11. Sorry, Detroit. He threw for 4,084 yards, 26 touchdowns, and 10 interceptions. I'm just saying, if your quarterback threw for 4,000 yards, 26 touchdowns, 10 picks, with a passer rating of 96.3, with a terrible roster where Detroit's number one receiver, Kenny Galladay, could not stay healthy.
Right, right.
Basically played behind an offensive line where I think the three of us could have protected him. Where everybody kicked the crap out of him. And yet Stafford's, everybody's looking at his age thinking, he's 32, he's no good. I think Matthew Stafford this year could be the steal of the draft. He's finally out of that toxic situation in Detroit. He's with a great head coach, and we know how creative Sean McVay is. He's got Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods. He's got it with a much better offensive line. Yeah, the division's harder, but he's playing in a dome. I think Stafford this year, I mean, Matthew Stafford's going behind Trey Lance in redrafts and all kinds of drafts. I think Matt Stafford this year will be the steal for fantasy owners.
And Brad, how about your fave? Or if, you know, if you want to talk about Stafford, feel free, but you can also present yours.
Sure, absolutely. And when I saw the list come by here, I told Kyle that Dylan stole my guy. I mean, I'm right with you with Stafford. I mean, I'm expecting big things out of him out in L.A. And I mean, I've liked him since he joined the league, and now with a nice complement of receivers, also playing next to a good defense. I mean, when's the last time the Lions could say they actually had a defense that could, you know, stop the other team and, you know, get the ball back for the offense? So, and a solid running back. I mean, yes, I know Swift is coming along, but I mean, I think the same thing with Akers. I think Akers is on his way to good things. But no, I'm very excited to see what Stafford's doing. I'm surprised that he's ranked lower than he is. I mean, he's definitely somebody I have an eye on. Since you took my pick there, I had to have a secondary pick. And I went with Joe Burrow in Cincinnati. A couple things. I typically like second-year quarterbacks. I know he didn't play a full season, but I think they obviously got him one of his favorite weapons from college, Jamar Chase joining Higgins on the outside. And I mean, I like their schedule. They have probably a last-place schedule. In the AFC North – yeah, I mean, he's got some tough competition. I mean, I think the Browns are going to be tough. Ravens are always tough. I'm not sure about the Steelers yet, but, I mean, the rest of their schedule, I mean, I know they're playing Jacksonville on a Thursday night, I think like week four or something like that, week three or four. I mean, I like his tools. I think he's going to come back with a chip on his shoulder. Hopefully his knee holds together for him. I am concerned about the offensive line, but I think once again, my philosophy is the Bengals defense is going to struggle and they're going to be in some shootouts. And Burrow is a competent and able quarterback to put up some points. And that's why I kind of like him, kind of as a sleeper a little bit in this position. So that's why he's one of my faves.
Like I mentioned earlier, I'm in a redraft draft right now. And just to reference where those three quarterbacks went, Burrow in the 8th, Tannehill in the 10th, and then Stafford at the end of the 11th.
Give me Stafford. Burrow in the 8th over those guys. Wow. I thought they'd be a little more grouped together, possibly.
Everybody must be a biased Bengal fan. I think Jamal Chase will get like 2,500 yards.
And now let's get to the nays at quarterbacks, the quarterbacks we're less excited about. So Dylan, we'll let you start again.
Unfortunately, I think Derek Carr is the guy. I know Derek Carr is not going high in redrafts, but have you seen a worse offseason than the Raiders? I mean, good Lord, they've gotten rid of like four-fifths of their offensive line. Nelson Aguilar was in New England. I mean, Unless Derek Hall's going to throw 70-yard bombs to Henry Ruggs and maybe Darren Wall once in a while, good luck.
I think, especially the offensive line, I think that's something that's been, you know, Derek Carr has been kind of pretty fortunate, not so much a higher sack quarterback because that offensive line has always been really great. But yeah, the losses to that line do kind of put him in peril. And, you know, John Brown, you can maybe argue that's an upgrade over Nelson Agholor, but probably not a significant enough upgrade to say that, like, this is a better receiving core than it was last year. Maybe Ruggs and Edwards as second-year players step up, but, I mean, the problem with Derek Carr, specifically fantasy-wise, is that he's got, you know, no rushing upside, really. I mean, he's not a very mobile quarterback in terms of gaining rushing yards and getting consistency. You're relying on him scoring a bunch of touchdowns, and with Josh Jacobs there, even though they don't like to pass in the football, they love to run with him in the red zone. So the touchdown upside is also not really there with Derek Carr. So he's definitely not the type of quarterback I look for. Now, I think he's going much later than the quarterbacks we say as faves. But yeah, it's still not a great list. I let's be honest. Like, I know, obviously, I chose a nay that I would think of for myself. But I kind of like all three of our answers here. So, Brad, why don't you share your quarterback nay? Which, funny, is in the same division as your quarterback fave.
It is. I mean, my name is Big Ben up in Pittsburgh. I mean, it kind of hurts to see his career kind of dwindled down like it has, because I definitely rostered him in the past, not even necessarily in his heyday, but I mean, and he wasn't always my first pick. He was sometimes my backup, and then you know, he would have a game where he'd, you know, blow up for like five touchdowns, and then the next week you're like, oh man, you know, well, which quarterback do I play? But I don't think that he's you know, ready for the season, ready. I don't think he's mentally there, mentally focused for the Steelers. I mean, I see the Steelers kind of taking a step back this season. Sorry, Sam. And I mean, he definitely has some weapons, but I mean, just his accuracy towards the end of the year. I mean, sure, they jumped out to what, 12-0 last year, but then just, you know, absolutely fell apart. I don't see him, you know, projecting high this season. And you talked about offensive line; they obviously have some holes on their offensive line this season as well, with Pouncey retiring. So he's, you know, missing that little battery mate that he's had for 10 years. So I'm not convinced on their receivers. I know we talked about their receivers before, how they're all kind of clumped together almost. I mean, nobody really stands out. So, I'm not a big fan of Big Ben this year or even going forward, if there is any more going forward for him.
Dylan, do you have any thoughts about Ben Roethlisberger?
I personally think the Steelers finished last in the AFC North and Big Ben should have retired. I mean, I don't care how many yards you threw for in the playoff game. Those interceptions were bad. I mean, Pittsburgh went from 12-0 to basically laying an egg the last month or so, the last month of the season.
Yeah, that offensive line is similar to the Raiders, right? It'd be unlike the Raiders, who I think it's a little scary for the Raiders because they've just lost all those pieces. Like last year, we really saw the Steelers offensive line bottom out. It didn't necessarily affect Ben that much, but it was also because he was so quick at throwing the ball out, but also meant that his yards per target was down, so that the yards efficiency wasn't there. And I mean, I don't know that he's going to, at his age, going to get any stronger. I know that that was a pretty significant elbow injury that cost him his entire or most of his 2019 season. So to come back from that, and to be honest, he actually exceeded my expectations last year, but it's still like, you know, and I almost wonder, did they almost throw too much again? Like, because he was slinging it and he looked really good and then kind of tailed off. I wonder if maybe they overused him and then he was too tired by the end of the season. Does he get stronger 2 years after the injury? Maybe, but I don't know. I'm a little skeptical. So yeah, I'm with you guys there. And my nay is Matt Ryan. So I don't know if all three of us agree on all three choices, but truly, I think, not to overstate one player's absence, but when, you know, when Julio Jones has been out of the lineup, Matt Ryan has not been very good. And I mean, Calvin Ridley had an amazing season last year, but the games where Julio missed, there was a marked difference in Matt Ryan's completion percentage, touchdown efficiency, which is funny because we're always talking about Julio never scoring enough touchdowns, right? But and I think maybe this will lead into maybe we'll actually naturally transition into the next position after this, but I feel as though even if Kyle Pitts is the tight end everyone thinks he is, I don't know that he's quite ready to be what Julio Jones is, which, you know, is, I don't think is unrealistic to say that, because Julio Jones has arguably been a top three wide receiver over the past decade. Like, not even just, I'm not necessarily talking fantasy, but like just pure wide receiver play, separation ability. And I guess actually maybe not separation. It's not even in Julio's game, but ability to outrun players and just that physical freak that he is and all that talent. I wonder, you know, Matt Ryan really, not an efficient quarterback. And again, I think like Roethlisberger and Carr also doesn't offer a lot of rushing production and mobility. So there's, again, you're relying it big time on touchdowns. And so that could be super inconsistent week to week. So Dylan, do we have a clean sleep? Are all three of us kind of saying nay to all three of these players? Or do you like Matt Ryan? I know maybe something you'll talk about later might indicate you might.
I mean, I think Matt Ryan's so consistent. If you look at the Falcon defense this year, they're going to be throwing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 600 passing attempts is probably likely once again. But I know Scott Connor, in some of the chats I've been with him, you know, guest recently, he's saying he doesn't it would be dumb for the Falcons to do that because he's so inefficient. It's almost more efficient to run the football the way how poor of his efficiency is. Again, maybe Kyle Pitts and Calvin Ridley can go supernova and change that, but I don't necessarily want to bank on that either.
I've got a question. Would you take Sam Darnold or Matt Ryan?
Matt Ryan.
I would go Ryan, but I think it's pretty close. Just because Darnold might offer a bit more ability to run, although I don't know that he necessarily will and gain those rushing yards to be consistent on a week-to-week basis. But, I mean, I kind of like Darnold's weapons a bit more. DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, and now with Terrace Marshall there. I mean, Terrace Marshall and Kyle Pitts, they're both rookies. And I mean, I guess Russell Gage is there, but I mean, if we're, you know, saying Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage, or DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, I'll take the Panthers duo. So I kind of like that receiving core. And I mean, Christian McCaffrey over Mike Davis. I know Mike Davis looked good in the Panthers last year, but I think we all think McCaffrey's a better passer. So I might almost be tempted to say Darnold, but I think it's close.
I think Sam Darnold's a top 10 quarterback this year.
Wow.
Okay, and that is also something I wanted to ask about. As we're, you know, finished talking about quarterbacks, that redraft league I keep referencing, I'm actually on the clock right now. I know last episode I kind of hinted at maybe getting a pick in. It didn't quite work out the timing, but and I took Dak Prescott in the 7th round, and now we're in the 17th round, and I don't have a backup quarterback yet. And the 16th round, you know, there was a while, there was a big gap where quarterbacks didn't go. Trevor Lawrence went 13.05, and then, you know, three full rounds without a quarterbacks, and then suddenly 7 quarterbacks went in the 16th round. And Daniel Jones, 16.09, and then there's been a bunch of receivers since then. But I almost feel like, you know, maybe a cusp of another quarterback push. So I don't know. Options right now are Roethlisberger's there, but he has the same bye week at Dak, so I'm just going to ignore it completely because that's not. I want someone that I can, again, pick up as a backup that I can basically, because that's really the only week I'm not going to play Dak, is his bye week. So we've got Trey Lance, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Derek Carr, and Sam Darnold. Those are the, and Jared Goff. Those, at least those are the four that I identify as they'll likely be the starters week 7. Maybe not so much Trey Lance. I maybe a bit of a risk there on the rookie, but so Trey Lance, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Derek Carr, Sam Darnold, Jared Goff. So a couple guys we've already talked about. So what are you two feeling on in terms of backup quarterback for me there?
I would lean towards your boy Trey Lance. I mean, I know he's a rookie, but I think by that point of the season, I think he's going to be behind center. And I mean, who are they playing that week? Do you know? Or?
Well, and that's what I was going to, because I have checked the week 7 schedule. So that did kind of almost want to maybe lean to that, but they are playing the Colts that week.
Oh, I could think of an easier game.
Yes, yeah.
I could, is it in Santa Clara or Indy?
It is in San Francisco, so they will be at home. It is a primetime game, actually. It's the Sunday night game.
There you go.
I don't know if they're going to throw the rookie out there.
49ers are coming off a bye week. I think that might be a time where Lance starts.
Yeah, and I was noticing that too. Yeah, the week six bye, do they get him ready? Especially with maybe a couple extra hours preparation for a Sunday night game. Do you maybe think, okay, he's already going to be nervous anyway for his first game. Might as well make it a primetime game. And then, like, you know, because like he almost won't, like the lights almost won't affect him because he's already going to be that nervous. But yeah, the Colts defense is kind of tough matchup, my thinking too.
But you're all playing at home though, so it's not like you're playing. I mean, I don't think you play him the next Halloween against the Bears, or it could be frosty in Chicago.
Yeah, you don't really want to make that his first start either. So yeah, it kind of does make sense that he'll play there. So I guess, are you both saying Lance?
Either Lance or Donald. I'm not as high on. I love Trey Lance. I think next year Trey Lance will be a star, but I don't know. I really like San Francisco's weapons, though. I mean, if Lance could learn the system, he's got a dang good team around him. I mean, with a Kittle, Ayuk, and a Deebo Samuel, more than enough weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I like Lance there, but I mean, looking at the schedule, so I see who. So the Panthers are at the Giants. Who else did you have? Goff?
Goff. Oh, God.
The Lions have the Rams, so definitely not Goff. Actually, the revenge game, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, you don't want that.
As much as we've been, said a big nay to Derek Carr, they are playing the Eagles that week. I almost wonder if that's actually the best matchup.
Is it in Philly or Vegas?
It's in Vegas.
Okay, so it's dumb. Might be one of those waiver options. I mean, be honest, I think maybe in your situation, because that's your quarterback, maybe you gamble with Lance.
Kyle, you want Lance. You love Lance.
This would be my first share, too, even though it is redraft. I'd much rather have him in Dynasty, but a redraft share would be nice and tempting. The other thing, too, I'm thinking of is, so I'm at 1808 or 1708, and then I'll be back at 1805. Literally, the four people ahead of me, like the next four picks of the turn, all went quarterback in the last round.
Yeah,
so I have a strange suspicion they're not going to take a third. Yeah. So I actually think what I'm going to do is I'm going to risk it and take my quarterback at 1805. If Lance is there, maybe risk it. And I mean, if not, like you guys said, I think, you know, there'll be probably a quarterback on the waiver wire somewhere. And if Lance goes, I don't mind taking Sam Darnold as a consolation. Again, thinking it's probably just the 1 week. And, you know, against the Giants at on the road, but against the Giants, I don't mind that matchup. So now I actually have to make a pick.
Okay. You could say a revenge game for Darnold being at that old building where Jet fans probably remember. I know it's different team at all.
Anyway, so yeah, I'll figure out a player. I know Jacoby Myers is there. I kind of like him as a wide receiver. He could be the top guy in New England. Gio Bernard, just because it's a league with, I think it's 1.5 PPR for running backs and 1.25 for wide receivers. So a guy like Bernard could catch a bunch of passes, but I also already have Fournette, so I don't know if I want to double up on the same team.
You really sure? Wait a minute, Fournette.
Good old Lenny.
Rojo won't be the starter there? I mean, Tampa's got too many running backs.
Yeah, that's why I don't really want to add it. Like, if it was just a two-guy split, I wouldn't mind having both, but it's a three-man split. So I already kind of planted my flag on Fournette in this league. For reference sake, Rojo had already gone off the board, so I didn't choose between Rojo and Fournette. It just, Fournette's the guy I went.
This happened to be.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, he was, I think, the best running back. I was debating between him and either the Bills guys, and I ended up getting Singletary on my next pick. So rather than, you know, I don't know if I would have got Fournette around there. So Joshua Kelly from the Chargers, in case he's the goal line guy. Yeah, this is tricky here. Wide receivers, Nico Collins, Sammy Watkins, Josh Reynolds, Darius Slayton, Dwayne Eskridge, MVS, Anthony Schwartz, KJ Hamler, DeSean Jackson, and again, Jacoby Myers. That's kind of the name I'm kind of leaning towards, to be honest.
I kind of like the Myers. I like the Myers there. I think so.
All right, so live on the clock pick, I'll take Jacoby Myers here, and in the 18th round, hope I get my I should probably get a quarterback, and it's just, you know, we'll see if it's Lance or not. But yeah, I think I'll wait one more round with him. I was thinking of, because I took Allen Robinson early, and once I took Dak, the idea kind of went out of my mind, but I was thinking, if I don't get one of the top six or seven quarterbacks, am I just going to wait and stack Fields with Robinson? And ultimately, I went with Dak and kiboshed that plan, although I did stack Dak with Michael Gallup, so still looking for those stacks in this draft, redraft, so maybe it's a little more aggressive on the stacks. Anyway, we'll get back to those faves and nays. Dylan, just because you're the guest, is there a position you want to talk about next? Then we've gone through quarterbacks.
Well, wide receiver.
All right. So your wide receiver fave, we're going to go to the Atlanta Falcons. So again, a topic we've been talking about before, it's Calvin Ridley. So are you saying that, are you bumping up Ridley now that the Julio trade has gone through?
Can I bump him up anymore?
Well, do you have him as your wide receiver one? I guess that is the appropriate question.
I don't see why he wouldn't be a wide receiver one. I mean, Lord knows if Aaron Rodgers is going to be the quarterback in Green Bay. I mean, yeah, Tyreek Hill makes a lot of sense, but they've got Travis Kelce there. Stephon Diggs in Buffalo makes some sense, but beyond it, it's Calvin Ridley and then your mother's furniture as Atlanta's wide receivers.
So you expect him to, now that Julio's gone, he's actually going to up in targets, even though he's got quite a few targets before. You think it's just going to upper stratosphere where he could lead the league in target share potentially, or maybe lead the league in targets?
I think Calvin Ridley will lead the league in targets. I don't know if he'll get all 100 and some odd catches like DeAndre Hopkins did last year, but he could get 120 something pass, especially playing inside on that fast Mercedes-Benz Stadium turf. Calvin Ridley could have a monster year.
You mentioned earlier you think the Falcons will once again pass over 600 times, so that should leave a ton of targets.
Especially with an extra game.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, now we're getting to 17. So, Brad, I can't remember if we talked about Ridley on the last episode when we were talking about our extensive Julio trade talk, but do you have any thoughts about him?
Yeah, I don't know if we really did either. I certainly think the targets are going to be there. I am a little concerned with his durability and of his size now that he's going to be the man in Atlanta. But, I certainly think that the Julio trade, I mean, it's a little bit more than an uptick. I mean, I think he does go up, three, four spots compared to where he was before. So, I think he is definitely someone to keep an eye on, to target, as far as, just sheer volume. And as we've mentioned before, Atlanta's going to be behind. So they're going to be chucking it all over the field.
Now for my fave wide receiver, I'm going deep into the draft. I know, Brad, you've got a couple of wide receivers, certainly a little earlier than where this player is going, but mine is Cole Beasley, who, with the injuries to John Brown, really emerged as the solidified number two wide receiver in Buffalo. Now, there have been recent reports that Emmanuel Sanders is really looking good at the early mini camps, but I think the relationship that Allen kind of cemented with Beasley, I think his role as a slot receiver there and targets over the middle is going to maintain. And so I expect another repeat season. And Beasley is not really being drafted where his production indicates, at least. So again, this redraft league that I'm in, he ended up going in the 13th round. And this was in the middle of a swing where I was going, heavy running back. I kind of made my backup tight ends, my backup wide receiver. So I took, was hammering running back a few rounds there, and I already had Devin Singletary. That's probably the only reason I didn't have him on this team. But I'm looking at it now, and how did I let him get to the 13th round? For me being in this draft, for him to go 13th and for him to not be on my team is pretty suspicious. I get a receiver I had a lot of last year. Certainly as a waiver wire pickup, because I felt he was undrafted in a lot of leagues. I don't think that's going to be the case, but I still don't think he's being drafted early enough. So my fave is Cole Beasley.
I mean, Cole Beasley's going, what, wide receiver 45, 50. And if you're in a PPR league, Cole Beasley's your man.
I agree. I mean, he could be the Bills' Julian Edelman, just the guy coming across the middle, getting the tough yards, getting the tough catches. I mean, he certainly has the making of it. I mean, we saw glimpses of it last year. So, yeah, I mean, for him to So I'm sorry, did he fall to you there, or you?
No, I did not take him. But
him. Okay.
That round, it went two picks after I took Tariq Cohen.
Gotcha. Okay. But no, I think that's a good fave. Yeah.
Both years he's been with Buffalo, he's been a top 36 wide receiver. Wide receiver 33 in 2019, and then last year, wide receiver 27. And Dylan, you were saying he went going as wide receiver 45. Like, that speed...
48-ish.
48. The last time he didn't finish that was 2017. He was wide receiver 72.
I think that was the year Zeke was suspended, because 2016 was Dak's rookie year.
Right. Okay, true. Yeah. Fair enough. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, he had a big year there. He had 98 targets. That's right. So, you know, even through two regimes, for the last 5 years, he's been at least wide receiver 43. So, again, being drafted as wide receiver 45, that's technically, like, beyond most of his floor is, at least what he's shown most of the last half decade. So, again, I think still being drafted at his floor, and I think there's tons of upside there with that draft pick, that draft cost. So, Brad, you've got two faves at wide receiver, and they're kind of opposite ends of, like, career points in terms of age. So you've got Adam Thielen and CeeDee Lamb. So, you know, but let you say a quick word about both of them.
Sure, yeah, just real quick. I like Thielen in Minnesota. I think Jefferson, I don't think he's going to necessarily regress, like, tremendously or anything. But, I mean, people are going to have their eye on him. They know that they have to... you know, double team him. He's going to be double teamed going over the top, where I think that's going to open things up for Thielen across the middle. I think Thielen's going to also be a big contributor in the red zone for the Vikings this season. So, you know, that's going to be some more points. So he's going to be, I mean, he is changing into a little bit more of a possession receiver. I kind of like where he's being drafted. And then CeeDee Lamb, once again, those second-year players, I tend to like them, especially coming off, you know, a pretty good rookie campaign, even with, you know, a mixed bag at quarterback in Dallas. And now with Dak coming back, I think good things are in store for Lamb. And I actually look for him to possibly – no, I do look for him to actually have a better season than Cooper does in Dallas. I mean, he has all the tools. He has the speed, the body control. You know, he can make people miss with a run after the catch. So I really like Lamb there. I mean, honestly, a couple years ago, I was hoping he was going to fall to the Jaguars. It looked like he almost was. I mean, I would have loved to have had him here in Jacksonville to pair up with Chark. But, yeah, no, I mean, I really like the kid. I mean, and once again, maybe it's just my second-year player bias, you know. But yeah, I like what he's going to bring to Dallas this season. That's going to be a fun offense to watch.
Actually, speaking of Dallas, Dylan, that does pose an interesting question. Who do you think is Dallas's number one wide receiver? Do you think it's Amari Cooper? Do you think it's CeeDee Lamb? Or do you think it's Michael Gallup?
I want to see Mike McCarthy's second year of the offense. Does he revert to the Green Bay offense where he basically threw 65-70% of the time and was in more of an even push? Because if the Cowboys throw like they did last year or first part of the year, I think CeeDee Lamb could have not a great year, a monster year.
Thank you, Dylan. Yes.
I think it all depends on what you want at that receiver in that range. Playing, you know, we saw CeeDee Lamb play a lot in the slot. And I don't know if it was that just they were doing that because he was a rookie and they wanted to maybe get him some more free releases. Or is it something they're going to continue to keep playing him in there? If so, I could see him being much more consistent than Amari Cooper. You know, on the perimeter, maybe there are times when he can get taken out of matchups more easily. Really tough to take a slot receiver out of the match. Tough to designate two people to kind of blanket cover him in the middle when it opens so much on the outside. A little easier to do on the perimeter. So I think from a consistency standpoint, that early in the draft, because in the redraft league I was in, they both Cooper and Lamb went in the fourth round. And in that fourth round, I want a consistent wide receiver, I think, first to kind of be my every week wide receiver one, if that, or even as a, you know, get two consistent guys there. I think where I'm looking more for the upside plays a little later on. So I think because of the player type, I prefer Lamb over Cooper in that range.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Cooper definitely pulls a Houdini act, you know, weeks at a time in a season. I mean, dating back to his time with the Raiders. So, I mean, as far as consistency, which is, you know, really what you want, you know, whatever league you're playing, redraft it or whatever, PPR, anything, you want to have that consistent, especially if it's a fourth round selection. So, yeah, that's why I lean toward Lamb as well.
To defend Cooper, I feel like last year, or at least certainly his time with Dak, has been much more of a week-to-week consistency than what was there in the rate with the Raiders. That was the worst for in terms of consistency. I feel like it's gotten a bit better with the Cowboys, but I don't think it's quite where we want it yet. At least not, again, for a fourth-round pick.
Can Amari Cooper play well outside Jerry Wool?
Yeah, I guess, you know, dome games, yes. But, yeah, right, I guess right. On the road is he's,
good point.
You know, You do have to play on grass. I'm just saying, Washington, Philly, and New York aren't exactly the warmest locations.
So a bit more of a nay on Cooper. It seems like we're all favoring Lamb over Cooper, but he's not quite a nay for us in this section. Although Dylan, I guess you and I were thinking very similarly. We both went with rookie wide receivers, thinking, okay, you know. Are they being a little too hyped to just immediately produce with high expectations? And, I feel like it's a lot of the top two receivers, at least top two rookie receivers, going in a lot of drafts, certainly redrafts right now. So you had Jamar Chase and I have Devontae Smith. I feel like we're going to give similar arguments, so I will let you make the argument. And if there's anything I want to add specifically for Smith, go ahead. But I feel like it's the same issue, right? Rookie wide receivers, how can we really trust them?
Yes. Everybody remembers how well Joe Burrow and Jamar Chase won in 2019. They set all kinds of SEC pass and receiving touchdown records. But Jamar Chase hasn't played the game in 2 years. A. B. You wonder if that timing will still be there without playing. And C. It's not just Jamar Chase as a receiver. You've got who's T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, and Joe Mixon in the backfield. So Cincinnati's got a few mouths to feed.
And to be fair, like the Eagles, it looks maybe like a bit more open. Like, you know, Smith could realistically be the number one target on the team, but I think you could make that argument for Chase too. Like, there is a possibility where he is the top guy there, but I think that the real issue with the Eagles is also the quarterback play. Like, what kind of quarterback quality is Devontae Smith going to get from Jalen Hurts? Is it going to be... Is it going to be something where the Eagles are looking to replace Jalen Hurts next year? Is that type of poor quarterback play? If so, from a redraft, again, Dynasty, they're fine. But in redraft perspective, they're like, again, in this redraft that I'm in, Chase went 503 and Devontae Smith went 605. And, you know, for Jamar Chase, he went before both the Rams receivers. Like, he went one pick ahead of Cooper Kupp and then Robert Woods later in that round. For Devontae Smith, some of the sixth-round receivers after him, both Steelers, Chase Claypool and Juju Smith-Schuster, Jerry Jeudy, Brandon Ayuk, Odell Beckham, T. Higgins.
Wait a minute. Both Rams receivers went after
Chase.
Paul Chase?
Yeah.
Ooh, they must like Joe Burrow more than Matt Stafford this year.
Again, we were talking about CeeDee Lamb. Like, CeeDee Lamb went four picks ahead of Jamar Chase. From a redraft perspective, I would expect that to be a bit of a difference. And again, seeing both Rams receivers ahead of him, and like, I think all those receivers I mentioned that went later than Smith in the sixth round, again, Claypool, Jeudy, Ayuk, Beckham, Higgins, Juju Smith-Schuster, from a redraft perspective, I think I'd prefer all of them.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Absolutely.
So yeah, so I think redraft-wise, both those rookie receivers, not quite on our board. So Brad, again, you had two receivers here. Again, you like talking about the receivers. So you have, it's funny because I kind of have opposite reactions to these names in terms of being a nay. So you've got DJ Moore and Cortland Sutton. So I'll let you decide who do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, I'll talk about Moore first. I mean, I can talk about both of them pretty much the same. So to go back to the quarterback situation that you mentioned before. Now, I know Dylan seems to really think that Darnold's going to flourish in Carolina. I don't see it. I mean, I know Moore is you know the man there, but you got Robbie Anderson as well, who you know worked with Darnold before with the Jets. So, I mean, I think there could be a little bit of chemistry there. I don't really have a lot of hair, but DJ Moore, the last couple of years, he hasn't really blown my hair back. I mean, there's nothing really – he hasn't really impressed me. I don't know if it's just the Panthers in general, but, I mean, I haven't really been completely impressed with, you know, what he brings to the table. And, I mean – I think losing, you know, Curtis Samuel, you know, as kind of more the underneath guy, I think Moore's going to, you know, have a lot of attention on him. And I just don't, once again, it goes back to the quarterback thing. Maybe I just have a real dislike for Sam Darnold, apparently, when it comes to that. And then Courtland Sutton, I mean, he really, you know, kind of broke my heart last year. I was looking for him to do good things in his second year once again, but I mean, once again, it's the quarterback situation in Denver. So things could change if you know, a different quarterback, you know, maybe one from the Wisconsin area or one from the Texas area ends up in Denver. But yeah, both of those guys, I mean, it has everything to do with, you know, who's throwing them the ball, and that's kind of why I'm leaning against them, and they're on my nay list.
Because it's interesting. So in this, again, redraft, it's the only one I've done, so that's why I keep referencing it. And again, it's also still ongoing, so kind of fresh right now. DJ Moore and Adam Thielen were only separated by 3 picks. And so because they're going similar rounds, you kind of really putting that on the quarterback, saying you trust Kirk Cousins that much more, that you think there's going to be a difference in production where they're going to be the same prices, but one guy you really like and the other guy you don't like.
Yeah, I mean, and I also like the other receiver more to possibly grab some of the attention. As I mentioned with Thielen, possibly stealing some red zone opportunities away from Jefferson or even Irv Smith up there. So, I mean, I think that the volume, I mean, Moore's going to get the targets, but I just don't really see a lot of production from him. So I'm not surprised that, you know, the difference between him and Thielen in the draft that you saw being 3 picks.
And it is interesting you say red zone, because that is one thing with DJ Moore. He's had some really good yardage seasons, a lot of good catches, good catch numbers, but touchdowns have been kind of a struggle for him.
Quarterback, man, quarterback.
Thielen last year, touchdowns made his season, right? So I have a little bit of an issue relying on that, but yeah, like you said, quarterback.
Yeah, that's kind of what I look at. I mean, the two go hand in hand. Well, what are your thoughts on Sutton, either you or Dylan?
Yeah, Dylan, why don't you go ahead with Sutton or Moore if you want to talk about that, Dylan.
I just wonder about how healthy Sutton is off the knee, and B, it'll be interesting to see if Drew Lock ever learns to be Denver's pass. Otherwise, he'll be in the unemployment line.
It's true.
Yeah, we could theoretically see Teddy Bridgewater start games for them this year.
Oh gosh, not Teddy Bridgewater.
And I wonder, because, you know, Jerry Jeudy, because it seems like Bridgewater, you know, not taking a lot of risks. Jerry Jeudy as a slot player getting open a lot. I know last year was the drops, but just seeing him with that type of separation, and, you know, in a position in the slot where it's easier to get open. I wonder if, especially for Bridgewater, he's going to lock in on Jeudy, and it's really going to make Sutton suffer.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. I mean, he's not going to be looking downfield. He's going to be, I mean, Bridgewater is certainly safe, and he's going to take the safe option. And I think the slot receiver backs out of the backfield, even possibly, you know, Fant on tight end. If Bridgewater's taking snaps, I mean, I think you've got to fade Sutton even more.
Yeah, I think at this point I'd say Teddy Bridgewater is a better quarterback than Drew Lock, but for Sutton's fantasy value, I agree. I think that might be the worst case scenario is a full season of Bridgewater. I'm trying to think back comparison, right? I know Sam Darnold, it seems like with the Jets, he really liked to target the slot receivers. It seems like Anderson did play a lot in the slot last year, but, you know, DJ Moore can also play there, maybe even a bit of Terrace Marshall. I wonder if the slot receiver for the Panthers this year is going to actually be a few players, and it's, you know, the slot receiver is going to get most of the targets, but because it's going to be 3 different players, it'll kind of spread itself out. I don't know, maybe that's really narrative driven with Darnold maybe is targeting the slot simply because the Jets' poor offensive line and the way it was set up.
Could the up-tempo nature of the Panther offense swayed your views on DJ Moore?
Possibly, and I mean, just the coaching staff as well. I mean, Kyle made a good point. I mean, I think those guys, I think those receivers, they're going to get moved around a lot. I mean, I think the Panthers are going to be behind. I don't trust Darnold. I gotta wait and see with Darnold when it comes to that. If he proves me wrong this year, I'll certainly consider some Panthers next year. But I'm not ready to jump in that boat yet.
So then, if you had to choose between DJ Moore and Kenny Galladay, who would you take?
Neither. Both rough quarterbacks. I mean, I think if it was between those two, I might lean towards Moore on that just because of the type of offense and the coaching staff. I mean, I think even with Darnold's limitations, I think Rule's going to be able to put him in better situations than what Danny Dimes is going to have up in New York.
Jason Garrett as offensive coordinator. That was not so close for me. I think it's more pretty easily over Kenny Galladay, personally. You kind of outlined a lot of the reasons there, Brad. I think it's I think I trust Darnold a bit more as a quarterback than Danny Dimes. Not by much, but I think that also maybe is back to like pre-draft evaluation, believing in Darnold before the NFL draft more than believing in Jones. So I don't know if I'm still stuck in that bias, but I think you said it right. Like, who's the offensive coordinator? Like, you know, the Matt Rhule, Joe Barry offense. I think I trust that offensive mind much more than Jason Garrett. So I'll say more over Galladay.
Should we move to tight ends here? Because it looks like somebody has somebody as a fave and somebody has them as a nay.
So I was actually going to use that to transition. So Brad, since you want to get the tight ends, let's talk about yours real quick. You've got Dallas Goedert as a fave.
I do. I like him in Philly. I mean, I think Jalen Hurts going into his second year, he's going to need an outlet. A huge, huge target. Most likely Ertz is gone sometime this week, maybe. I don't know. Who knows when that's going to happen. And I'm looking for more consistency out of Goddard. I mean, he definitely could string together a couple weeks, and then he would just be ghost for a couple. But I think with Ertz gone, I think Hurts is going to lean on him a little bit more. Goddard's going to have some more opportunities, certainly in the red zone. A nice big target for Hurts to hopefully find. And I kind of like him as a sleeper. I think I've seen him like 12th or 13th in the tight end rankings, which I thought was actually pretty low. I thought he would be a little bit higher, but I like the possibility that he has in Philly this year. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I don't think you're crazy with Goddard, especially because it seems like young quarterbacks always like tight ends. Now the question is, would Jalen Hurts take off and run or throw to the tight end?
That's true. He does have some maturation. Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, he's only got, a handful of games under his belt. So, I don't know. We'll definitely have to see. But, I mean, I think the potential's there. I mean, you talk about safety blanks, but I think Goddard could be more than a safety blank, especially in the red zone.
One thing I mentioned earlier, right, the assumption that Devontae Smith's going to come in and be the number one target. I mean, it could be Dallas Goedert. Maybe Dallas Goedert is Jalen Hurts' favorite target through this season. So I don't hate it necessarily. Specifically, like, you know, if you're mentioning he's tight end 12, in this particular draft I did, he was the tight end 9, which, again, it's that's pretty good, I think, in terms of where he is ranked in tight ends. But it's where I think it's where the actual draft position is relative to the other positions. I think that's a little too high. It's this kind of this middle ground of tight ends that rarely has ever worked out. Most years, it's kind of an avoid situation. And like in this particular draft, it was Mike Gesicki in the 6th and then Dallas Goedert, Noah Fant in the 7th. I think all three of them, you could kind of make, they could be the number one target on their team, or they could end up 3rd or 4th. And I think making early investments there where you can still get starting wide receivers that might be your lineup every week, or the kind of the second wave of running backs. I don't really like taking a tight end there. I've kind of preached this every year on this podcast. I'm a go early on tight end or go late. And that certainly influences my fave, which is Mark Andrews. And in this particular draft, I ended up getting Mark Andrews in the fourth round. Again, a slight tight end premium. It's 1.5, at least premium relative to wide receivers. 1.5 PPR for tight ends, 1.25 for wide receivers. So it's not much, but it was enough to where I really wanted to get one of those top, for redraft, I'll say top five. I know based on Dylan's fave, he'll say top six. And also based on, you know, where the players are going, because there were six tight ends taken in the first four rounds. And I took one of them in Mark Andrews. So I certainly believe, even though Rashad Bateman's been drafted, even though they've signed Sammy Watkins, we've speculated, okay, Dallas Goedert could be the number one target on his team. Maybe Mike Gesicki, maybe Noah Fant. You know, what we've seen from the Ravens last two seasons, Mark Andrews has been Lamar Jackson's favorite target. I don't think the rookie Rashad Bateman is enough to sway that, so I expect Andrews will, again, lead the Ravens in targets, and I think he'll be one of the few difference makers at tight end. So still in the fourth round, that's an early investment, but I think it's worthy, considering Kelsey's being pushed into the first round, and you're getting guys like Waller and Kittle in the sometimes second round. I think Andrews as a fourth round pick is I'm all on it, so probably one of my faves. And Dylan, your fave is another tight end who is in this draft. He did go in the fourth round as well, so it seems like he's kind of right in that range. And it's the rookie Kyle Pitts. So I don't know if you want to compare him to Mark Andrews or just I know we've talked about Julio Jones enough. So give your thoughts on Kyle Pitts if you want.
First off, we have never seen a tight end with Kyle Pitts' speed, height, length, athleticism, and potential. Secondly, much like Calvin Ridley, Lord knows who can't. It's basically Calvin Ridley, Kyle Pitts, maybe Russell Gage, but if the Falcons throw like we think they do, I think Kyle Pitts could easily outproduce almost every tight end, other than maybe Travis Kelce. If you asked me today and said, would you take Kyle Pitts over Darren Waller? I probably would, because I like Kyle Pitts upside more than Darren Waller.
I think the one thing I would push back on the most is saying we've never seen a tight end like this. Noah Fant, in terms of his relative athletic score, the spark score, it's right there where Pitts is. And in terms of college production, really not that far off. It slightly favors Pitts in Noah Fant's best receiving yard season was only 519 yards in college. Pitt's best is 770 yards. But Noah Fant had more touchdowns in college than Kyle Pitts. So I don't know that Kyle Pitts is above and beyond what Noah Fant is. And we've seen Noah Fant struggle to acclimate to the NFL.
Wait a minute. Who have his quarterbacks been in Denver? I think you could have thrown him better passes.
Joe Flacco's a Super Bowl winning quarterback. No, but he is, and he's someone who likes to pepper tight ends. I don't think Matt Ryan's that amazing. We'll say better than Flacco, but I don't think he's otherworldly, absolutely, a totally different planet than Joe Flacco. And, tight end, it's a really tough position to make that adjustment. Now, is Kyle Pitts not going to play as a tight end in a sense? Is he going to play more out wide, kind of like Evan Ingram in his rookie year, which Evan Ingram, one of the best rookie seasons for a tight end really ever. So maybe that is the key to success there. But I'd still bank on what we've known, again, in Mark Andrews. So I think it's more just I've seen them in the same round, so I'll just take 10 times out of 10, I'll take Andrews ahead of Pitts. And to be honest, because of how early he's going from a redraft perspective, Pitts is my nay. I kind of get in fantasy, in Dynasty. In my Dynasty rankings, I've got Pitts in the top six. I think part of that tier, I've got him ranked ahead of Noah Fant. I really don't like the Broncos situation at quarterback. I'll admit that enough. And Fant, hasn't necessarily produced it, but certainly from a redraft perspective, I have a hard time seeing Pitts that early. So, Brad, I guess you got to be the decision maker in the middle.
Well, I mean, when it comes to the college comparison, I mean, Pitts really didn't step on the stage until this last season, and he actually missed a handful of games because of injury. And I mean, I think he would have he could have had 1,000 yards receiving this last season in Florida easily. I mean, when he was on the field, he was uncoverable. Yes, it was, you know, college competition, and he's moving into to a new realm. And but it really depends on like what you said, what the Falcons are going to do with him. Or, you know, is he going to be in line? How much is he going to be spread out? Is he going to be wide? Is he going to be in the slot? And the good thing for Pitts is he can do whatever, he can do any of those. I mean, he moved around at Florida. Just his speed is, once again, his body control, his ability to really get to create separation down the seam or even on a flag route, anything like that, really just is something special. I mean, I think I mentioned before, I'm a Florida Gator fan, so I definitely saw plenty of Kyle Pitts this past season, and I know what he can bring. I don't know if I would necessarily put him in a nay category. In a redraft, I would probably come along with you, Kyle, and go with Mark Andrews just because of the proven talent. I mean, I actually, in a handful of drafts last year, I want to say Andrews was selected like literally the pick before I was going to go. And we all know that feeling. I mean, you have your eye on a guy, he's falling to you, and boom, you know, the pick right before you go, and then you're left scrambling. Hopefully I'll do a better job of having my research done and everything. But I mean, I think Andrews is consistent for the most part. I mean, he definitely had a couple weeks where he disappeared, but I do tend to lean towards your size as far as rookie tight ends and what they're capable of. But yeah, definitely in a dynasty format, I would go with Pitts because I mean, he's certainly a special player. I'm looking forward to watching him. I know my son is a big fan. We're going to be watching some Falcons game along with the Jaguars this year, I think. So, it would be tough for me to put him in the nay category, but I don't think I would have him in the yay category either, if that makes any sense.
So you truly are right in the middle. Great. So nothing's resolved. So, but I mean, you've gotten three different opinions, three different voices on Kyle Pitts. So, you know, balanced approach to how we all view Pitts here. So Dylan, back to you with your tight end nay. Again, a tight end I just mentioned it in terms of someone who, you know, remarkably well as a rookie. In fact, I'm pretty sure that's been his best fantasy season was his rookie season. It's kind of all been downhill from there for Evan Engram, and you've got him in the nay. So are you kind of saying this downward trend for Engram will continue into 2021?
Actually, I can confirm Ingram's career high of 722 yards came in his rookie year. I look at last year, and yeah, he played 16 games, which seems like a rarity with all the injuries he's dealt with, but last year, he caught 63 balls, 654 yards, only one touchdown. One touchdown when you're a mismatch in the red zone?
Yeah.
Really? 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 I mean, Mike Gesicki gets one touchdown a week on accident. Every Dolphin game I see, like, Mike Gesicki's getting a touchdown from
a tip pass
from somebody. Like, he might get like two passes, 30 yards, and a touchdown. I'm like, why couldn't Evan Engram do that?
And it's funny, Brad, you've got Logan Thomas as your nay. And the argument I have against Engram, I can play that same argument actually against Logan Thomas. So I'm curious to your reasoning behind putting Logan Thomas in the nay.
My reasoning is the change of quarterback. I don't know if it's the same as yours. I think Fitzpatrick coming there, and so not just the change of quarterback. Let me include Curtis Samuel in the mix. I think having Scary Terry and Samuel on the outside, I think Fitzpatrick's mindset is typically always to push the ball downfield, and Thomas is not a down the seam runner. I mean, he's more of an underneath, kind of safety valve, which worked out perfect for the plethora of Washington quarterbacks they had last season. And from what we saw, and I mean, Fitzpatrick's been in the league for what, 17 years? I think we saw on Twitter with his little chalkboard thing he had this week. But I mean, he's there because he's a gunslinger. I mean, the guy, he can put up 5 touchdowns in a game, and the next week he's going to throw 5 interceptions. And he's a risk taker. He seems to go down the field more than the check down. And that's where Logan Thomas kind of, you know, made his mark last year. I mean, certainly won me a few weeks when I picked him off the waiver wire, and then he would disappear, you know, because they changed so many quarterbacks so many times. And I mean, it's a great story. I mean, I think we kind of hinted on that a couple episodes before or something like that, but changing over from quarterback and everything. But I just think with Fitzmagic there, he's going to look beyond the, 4-yard curl, the 4-yard out route, and go to his tight end, or sorry, go to his wide receivers.
That is a good point, actually. Fitzpatrick, you know, a high percentage of his targets going to wide receivers, even when he's had talent at tight end. And remember the year with the Buccaneers, really, that's kind of the year where Godwin broke out. But before that, everyone was thinking maybe OJ Howard as the breakout, and get nothing in terms of targets from Fitzpatrick. I think DeSean Jackson was there that season too, so you know, the tight ends were afterthoughts, and that is a fear there. But I was thinking more, okay, the arrival of Curtis Samuel, maybe even the draft of the rookie Diami Brown. I think it's similar with Evan Engram, almost similar situations. They get a free agent receiver in Kenny Golladay. They draft a receiver in Kadarius Toney. So I was thinking more that the infusion of extra talent in both those receiver rooms are really the reason I really don't like either tight end. Dylan, what do you think about Brad's decision to put Logan Thomas as a nay?
It might depend on who the quarterback is, because if it's Taylor Heineke, I think Logan Thomas would be okay. I don't think he'd be great with his value, but, you know, with McLaurin, I think Samuel in the slot being with his old head coach will be interesting. And if, don't forget the running backs, because Antonio Gibson was big last year, and Jaden McKissin coming out of the backfield as a PPO option.
And we'll move over to running back real quick, and maybe we'll go a little bit differently for the structure, because there's something kind of similar for a lot of the players we have. So actually, both my yay and nay. Brad, you're nay at running back, and Dylan, you're yay. And all these running backs, they're all second-year backs. So we'll start with those nay. Well, actually, kind of a comparison of all, really, we'll say the top, you know, the top six running backs that were rookies last season. So, you know, the four players that we've got on our various lists here: Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Antonio Gibson. You can also throw in Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins. I know Jonathan Taylor's my guy number one there. Out of those backs, Dylan, who's your number one? If you had to pick one, and again, regardless of draft price, all of them available to you, you can draft one. Who are you taking out of those six second-year running backs?
Be an easy choice for me. I mean, be an easy choice. Let's see. You've got the best offensive line in football. You've got a coach who's willing to run the football. And literally nobody can tackle you late in games. John Taylor is almost unguardable late in games, because literally you could just hand the ball and say, John Taylor up the middle, and he will get 6 yards every carry, and there's nothing the defense could do about it.
Brad?
I wanted to disagree here, but no, I out of those six, it would have to be Taylor as well for me. I mean, I hate that the Jaguars have to see him twice a year with that porous defensive line, but I mean, I think he's going to get even more carries this season, more opportunities out of the backfield receiving as well. So, yeah, I would certainly lean Taylor there.
Okay, so I think we're all in agreement Taylor's the number one guy. I think maybe that's why, because he's going so early, it's tough to say him as a fave, like in terms of draft price, because, you know, he's definitely locked in as a first-round pick. So, Dylan, you've got Cam Akers as a fave. So actually, before Brad, I'll ask you, who do you have at number two for out of these top six running backs? Is it the guy that Dylan has his fave, Cam Akers? Is it the guy I have my fave, DeAndre Swift, or is it someone else?
Once again, Dylan took my guy, and it was going to be Cam Akers, but you know, trying to put some new blood on the sheet there. But yeah, it's got to be Cam Akers for me. Just I drafted him last year, and I held on, waited, because I knew what the guy could do in college. I saw what he did at Florida State behind a terrible offensive line. He would still get 100, 150 yards a game. Just an absolute animal. I'm very excited to see what he does with the Rams this season. I know there's a big Cam Akers train going around everywhere. Everybody loves him, and if I'm not conducting the train, I'm certainly riding first class with him. But as far as my pick, Eckler's pretty much a no-brainer. But I did throw Miles Sanders in there. Originally, I wasn't going to do that. I was just because of kind of the situation. I wasn't really that impressed with what he did last year. He did have some injuries and stuff like that. However, I did see an interesting stat that kind of caught my eye. So not only the rushing abilities, but they I can't remember this person. I'm sorry, I couldn't give them credit, but they kind of extrapolated what he would have had reception-wise, and it was close to 70 receptions. Obviously, that's going to come in handy for a PPR league. Once again, we talked about Jalen Hurts going into his second year. He only has a few games under his belt. Once again, why I like Goddard is the same reason I like Sanders. I think he's going to be there to kind of bail Hurts out. Hopefully, you know, Hurts doesn't take off running. He can trust his players a little bit. And I think Sanders can not only catch a swing pass, he can catch a wheel route or get that important first down to extend a drive. And we saw what he can do with running the ball. I mean, he's got nice speed, pretty good ability to make people miss. So originally I wasn't going to put him on there, but I was going to go with Cam Akers, but I thought I'd throw Miles Sanders in there. And a lot of it, like I said, has to do with the extrapolation I saw with the possible almost 70 catches from last season.
Okay, so I think we're kind of all in agreement. Jonathan Taylor, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift. From the second year backs, is that everyone's top three entering this season?
I mean, Clyde and Rousselet maybe, but probably those three.
Yeah, I agree. I really like Swift. I mean, I hate that he's on the Lions, but I like what he brings to the table.
Okay, so we get agreement there. I'm curious, out of those six second-year running backs, who's last on the list? I put my nay as Antonio Gibson, so I think I'm kind of revealing myself there. I know, Brad, you're kind of, you had kind of a Gibson and CEH as a nay there. So for you, who's last? Who's sixth on this list of six?
But as far as those six, it would be Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who I have as a nay. After his, opening game and everybody loved him, I'll give him credit. It was a fantastic rookie campaign against, the Texans, I think, or something. But I think in that offense, there's only one football. And there's a lot of guys that demand the football. And personally, I think Mahomes is out for blood this year. I think he was embarrassed at the Super Bowl. I think he's coming in with a major chip on his shoulder, and I look for him to blow up, which is really going to be as far as fantasy value, going to be detrimental to CEH. So I have him. I would slot him sixth as far as the second year running backs on your list.
How about you, Dylan? Who's six for you? So we've already got Taylor, Akers, Swift, and then you've already said you almost said CEH at three, so probably three, four. So between Dobbins and Gibson, I guess those are the last two. Who's five and who's six for you?
Probably Antonio Gibson. And I know some people worried about the timeshare. Oh, don't get me started with a J.K. Dobbins timeshare. If I hear J.K. Dobbins timeshare again, I'm gonna run like 20 miles. But I'm not sure what to expect from Washington's backfield this year. I think McKissick and that PPR role could be interesting. And you don't know this year, and you know Rivera will want to try and run the ball, but Washington's gonna have a great offensive line, so things could get a little murky there. So I really like Antonio Gibson. I think he's fine. I mean, if he were on my team, I'd be happy. But I would be thinking, oh crap, it's just a week they get behind 21-10, and then J.D. McKissick plays the whole second half. I'm like, ah!
No, that is a fear, but and I almost wonder, actually, Brad, the reason Gibson's on my nay list is very similar to your reason with Logan Thomas. Ryan Fitzpatrick, not necessarily a dump down, check down, dump off to the running back type of quarterback. So with so many, you know, likely so many targets going to McLaurin, Curtis Samuel, and maybe even the rookie Dyami Brown, I don't know that Gibson's got a lot of pass catching upsides, which puts him actually really similar to J.K. Dobbins. But I like that Ravens offense and Dobbins' ability to get touchdowns more than Gibson with Washington. So that's why he's my six here. And we're going to end the episode, actually, Dylan, with your nay at running back. Now, we've talked about a lot about these younger guys, but this is a bit of a more seasoned veteran here in Ezekiel Elliott.
Yes, you know how many leagues I've drafted Ezekiel Elliott in? Zero. I've never drafted Ezekiel Elliott in any league, and I'm not doing it this year. I look at Ezekiel Elliott's work the past 5 years and wondered, are we seeing a decline in Zeke? I mean, last year was, put it mildly, bad. Bad in Dallas. Now, part of it was Dak Prescott missed the whole year. I get it. But Zeke only averaged 4 yards per attempt, and Dak was not the only one hurt last year. I doubt Dallas's offensive line stays healthy, especially with a 17-game season. I don't trust Zeke. Yeah, I know he's improved being a receiver, but in terms of PPR option, I'd much rather have Austin Eckler. I'd much rather have Alvin Kamara. I'd much rather have Dalvin Cook. This year, I mean, Derrick Henry's going number 10, could be 9-10. Ezekiel Elliott's number 3 behind Saquon and CMC. I mean, be honest, if you ask me today, would I rather have Jonathan Taylor or Ezekiel Elliott on my team? I'd probably take Jonathan Taylor on that Colts offensive line over Ezekiel Elliott and an aging Cowboy offensive line.
Dylan, and not to like totally question your sources, but I'll be honest, I have like in only one redraft league, but even in startups I've done, I have not seen Zeke go ahead of Dalvin Cook. Cook in everything I'm seeing, Cook's always going ahead of Zeke. So
it's like one or two spots.
But you're right. Derrick Henry seems to be getting like a lot of like people are kind of discounting him a little, but maybe Zeke's not facing that same discount. I kind of see them as really similar backs. So if, you're right. If like Zeke and Henry aren't going in the same range, then maybe that's where the disconnect is.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you look at Tennessee, they've got Brown and Julio. Yeah, the Cowboys have got 3 good wide receivers, and Dak could occasionally run in himself. I look at Jonathan Taylor and think, who will Wentz give the ball to in the red zone? I mean, himself. I mean, T.Y. Hilton. Who's the second-year guy? Michael Pittman. But Jonathan Taylor's the man there. It's his offense. I'm not sure it's Zeke's offense in Dallas anymore. I think it's more Dak's offense than anything, especially with what kind of contract Jerry gave him.
Anyway, so faves and nays, and I gotta say, Dylan, this was definitely, at least for me, one of my favorite episodes, so really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, this is a good time.
So, yeah, Brad seems to enjoy it too. So, and if our listeners enjoyed and want to hear more of you, can you let them know where they can find and follow you?
I am on Twitter at DylanSports1. You can also listen to the Big D podcast, which is So broadcast on the Spunky Spectrum Sports YouTube page. You can find all the information there and contact me 24/7, 365, except at like 4:30 in the morning while I'll be happily sleeping.
Just respond in the morning when you get up, that's all. And, you know, if you want the same kind of access to us, you can find all of us on Twitter, the podcast at FPC_fantasypod. Your co-host, you can also follow us. Brad's at @therundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the full press coverage app. It's available for free on Android and iOS stores. Give you access to the written content like Brad's recent article. We hinted at it last episode. It's out now on the Jaguars' most intriguing matchup. So you can go through the Full Press Coverage website, of course, but if you've got the Full Press Coverage app, you've got that article and every other article you've got at your fingertips. It includes access to the Full Press Radio Network as well, so get the download the Full Press Coverage app for free. Also, shout out to PA the Second on Twitter at @PA_II official. He wrote, produced, and performed on the song that we use as our intro and outro music. That song is called Melody. Shout out to Kate a second. Shout out to all of our listeners. We really appreciate you here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.